Hi, this is Debbie Q, and you're listening to The Right Chew. The Right Chew is a podcast about all things strange and unusual, especially in reference to a death. Now, this next episode is one that many people have told me not to do for a variety of reasons. I understand completely, and I'm not going against what they said. I deeply took into consideration every single person I asked said, don't do it. So there's that. I don't know. This day was a bad day. I don't think I've ever been this aggravated doing this. And maybe it's to release some tension. I don't know. I just know that I feel compelled to do it. Not only as, you know, I don't think I'm going to give too much of my opinion about what happened or what I think should have happened or anything like that. More or less, I know my audience. I know I have an audience that goes from very young. I know there's like 16-year-olds that listen to this up to, I don't know, that part I don't know. But if I could get any young person to listen to a certain aspect of this, I thought, you know, this case really gnawed at me. And as close as it is to me, it is interesting. It's an interesting subject. I just felt I could not let this one go. So I'm not going against the people that have, you know, with my best interest in heart, told me not to do this. I understand they just worry about me, especially the homicide department. I ask them questions frequently. In fact, yesterday, I have to say, I was going over a case that I'm going to definitely be doing. It's the case of George Hennard. I don't know if his name's His name was George, and he was in Texas, and he was literally was part of the worst massacre that the U.S. had seen before the Virginia Tech incident. And he had used a P-89 Ruger and a Glock 17, which is usually the standard law enforcement weapons that are provided, the ones they use most frequently in Philadelphia. Glocks in general are just used. So anyway, I wanted to know the difference between double action and single action. I understand what it means, but it's wild because it could, you know, some guns can either be single action and double action. I am not this major gun aficionado. I have shotguns. I'm around guns. I just did not, I'm not this big gun buff by any means. I would be terrified to kill someone, in general, let alone with a gun. I just cannot imagine that feeling. So regardless, they were going over the single action, double action, because I said, this is what this guy used when he, you know, why would he bring this? I was just asking all kind of questions. And I brought this up and they were like, you know, I wish you wouldn't do something so close to home. And I said, yeah, but I think I can do it in a way that brings upon questions in people's mind and questions that go a little further than I usually go to in The Right Chew. So I will do the story and everything. And then at the end, if you just wanted to hear the story, I will say the point at when the story is over. It bled into my personal life and I got into a conversation within myself about certain aspects because I believe the devil is real, not the horns and red man that you see. Like I do not particularly believe in that, but the devil in that there could be a good person swayed by the devil. And I truly believe that. But that has to come at the end. Right now, the business end of The Right Chew, I want to congratulate Gisela Kay on her third entry of her serial killer books, The Killer Clown, John Wayne Gacy. I am very proud of her. I bought it. I was the first purchaser of the book. And I support all local artists, Instagram artists. I, if If I have extra money that week, I am buying what anyone's selling, because I believe strongly in supporting artists in general, because artists, art imitates life, life imitates art. Artistry is where we get everything from, you know? That is what we thrive on as a human race. Well, the one thing that's been consistent since the beginning of time is drawings, even in caves and before people could talk, they were drawing. With that being said, congratulations, Gisella. I am very proud. I did want to say that I'm doing the Alaskan case. There's an Alaskan massacre case that people are very much interested in. I had initially heard of this on a TV program, and they did not even go over a very large portion, which surprised me, but I will do that case next. And then after that, I have to convert. I mean, I'm getting a lot of episodes now. My son was right. He kept saying, Mom, you're going to get to the point where you're going to have all these episodes and then you're going to have to convert them to YouTube. And it's going to be hard. And he's right. The more episodes I get, the more I'm getting nerve wracked by just the thought of doing all this. Too many people are asking for YouTube at this point. And I told them, you know, I don't know whether I want to do a taping of myself and then I can split it and put one part on YouTube as a visual and another part on the podcasting platform. Because I also realized that podcasting is still relatively a new platform. So not that many people know that there's a Spotify or a Stitcher and they don't know where to go for podcasts. And that is the truth. I was surprised to find that out, but podcasting is new, you know, and to the podcasters, we are all in it and we're like, oh my God, it's the new wave and all that. But to people outside of it, they don't even know where to go to get it. I really do want to get on YouTube because it's a platform that's too huge to ignore. TheRightShoePodcast.com for all things. I didn't get pictures of the last episode up yet because I'm really trying to figure out what to do. So after this episode and the Alaskan episode, there might be a little break because I'm trying to figure out what to do. Anyway, I used to have a website, Bookshop Worm. That's where my Bookshop Worm Twitter handle comes from. I do want to do that again. So I would like to do a part where I actually give like suggestions. There were certain things I watched and listened to last week that were really good. I'm going to go through them quickly and then I'm going to go through the story. Okay. There's Michelle McNamara, who was instrumental in catching the Golden State Killer. She died before it even came out. And that sucks. Her book was named And I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And that was the Golden State Killer, Joseph James DeAngelo. HBO Max has the I'll Be Gone in the Dark 6-part series. And it's about this. It's about the Golden State Killer. It's very good. The Night Stalker on Netflix is very good. And there's two YouTubes that I have to shout out to because one I just found, it's been around a while, obviously, because he has well over 1 million listeners or subscribers, and it's Lazy Masquerade. It is so scary, I have to say. Just listen to a couple of them. Excellent, excellent, excellent. They don't need my help, but it's good. So I if you like scary, spooky stories, go there. And there's a thing called That Chapter with a guy, they always call him Irish Mike, and he had one episode on last week. And as I was taping, I kept hearing all this noise in my microphone. And I was watching my dog because my dog will flip if he hears a sound. So I'm very sensitive to when he's sensitive. But he's sleeping right now, good and hard. If he isn't, I'm right up, you know, like, what's going on? And he had this thing. It was fascinating. It was a woman that was having sleep troubles. And she kept, somebody said, keep your microphone on, keep a microphone on, some sort of taping device at night so that you can find out what is going on in the middle of the night because she kept waking up. They taped it, and then it was so frightening. In the middle of the night, you hear a guy say something to her, and she says, like, something alarming, like, go away or something like that. And I'm telling you, it scared the crap out of me. And even Mike had said, you know, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but it sure is scary. And it just made me think, when I hear those strange noises at night, is it just, you know, strange noises? Is it the neighbors filtering in because this mic is so sensitive? What is it? You know, so I had heard these weird noises, and then I actually had my husband check, and he found out it was me ticking my foot against the bottom chair. Some things can be explained, but some things can't be explained. And that was really good. So I just had to give, I love giving recommendations because I'm always so into, you know, I've been into true crime. Michelle said it so greatly. I have a murder habit and it's bad, and I would feed it for the rest of my life. That's how I've always felt. I've always been fascinated with murder, not in the way of, you know, those Richard Ramirez, Ted Bundy groupies that thinks he's so hot. I never thought a serial killer was hot. I think they're depraved and disgusting, but the fascination on my end is the psychology of it. I eat it up. I cannot get, and I don't know, some people go through, you know, why do women love true crime so much? It's because they're sitting in a safe environment, but it's picking at the part in their head that is the flight or flight response. That is why, because you're not truly in danger, but your brain is kind of getting that excitement, you know? So it's like a little high. I thought that was an interesting evaluation. I am going to go into this. Now, I will go into it, and I'm not going to give my opinion. The opinion is up to you. And afterwards, I want to talk about just a certain aspect of it. What I feel could possibly have happened. I am 100% for the victim at all times. All times. So there's that. That being said, this is the story. Okay, so one day I was going through the Instagrams and somebody had brought up casually a name I hadn't heard of in many years. And I thought, wow, I forgot all about that. What did happen after the crime? What I found surprised me. So I will do it in chronological order. We got to go back for this, way back. Here I am, walking to school, and somebody comes up to me and says these words. Van Zandt killed his mother with a butter knife while high on LSD. And I was like, what? And then I thought, wait a minute. The only Van Zandt I know was one kid. I will not use his name because he was the brother. I had went to school with a kid with the last name Van Zandt, and he was like a kid that kind of almost disappeared into the background. You know, a lot of people in my school had these vibrant personalities. He was one guy that kind of just was very quiet. I remember glasses. He always had glasses on. Shy. There was no overt personality that I remembered. And in fact, it was only later when all this came about that I realized him and his brother were adopted. I mean, that's what it said in the paper. I go to this newspapers.com, and for a monthly fee, you can go back to any newspaper that you want. And I went back, and it said that they were both adopted. So, but at the time, I was thinking Van Zandt as the one kid that I went to school with when I went to public school. I did change it to Catholic school later only because I didn't want to take the bus to school. George Washington was the public school, And I didn't want to take the bus to school. I just wanted to walk. Everybody went to George Washington High, which was the public school. I had assumed that Van Zandt had went as well. So that being said, I thought, well, I haven't seen that kid Van Zandt in a long time. I wonder what happened. Van Zandt had stabbed his mother with a butter knife while he was high on LSD. And I was just like, that is impossible. I mean, they said the brother's name. You know, I finally found out the real story. And when you're younger, you know, you are so caught up in your own drama. I was really in a very interesting place when I was 17. A place I probably shouldn't have been. But, you know, at the time it seemed like fun. And that is part of the story at the end, how the devil comes to you in many ways. And the devil is always smiling. The devil doesn't come to you in this, you know, snarling way that you, with the tail and the horns. Here, I found out that it was Eric Van Zandt, the brother of the kid that I had went to school with, and they had both been adopted. And Eric Van Zandt was born addicted to heroin by a mother who could not take care of him. She really struggled. And then, so there was a very popular couple in Morrell Park. They lived on this little side street, Judith and David Van Zandt. Their names were in the paper. I mean, they did not, you know, he was adopted, but they stood by him because they were at, especially the mother, it seems, was at every single trial date, everything, saying that her son, things were not often as understood as they are now. Even now, drugs are so misunderstood. And when he was addicted at birth, and they said that he was mentally ill, you know, all these things contributed to this aggressive personality. In the papers that I read, there was things like Mr. Tough Guy, Mr. Bully. And now some of what I read, I kind of, you know, you have to really read with a grain of salt, because I remember when Tina Severance had died, there were some people that just wanted to get in the paper. And then there's others that had genuine thoughts or truths to add to the story. And a lot, so you don't know. Some people said Eric was a nice kid. Now, I mean, his parents would know best, even his especially his adoptive parents. And she said, like, 2 months before this incident happened, Eric had went and took a baseball bat and smashed her car because he was mad at something. He either couldn't get something. It was a minor incident, but he just exploded. There was a woman, Margaret Boyle, who came to the house daily. Or not daily, but somewhat frequently. And I think she lived pretty much by herself. And she worked at a place called Angelo Brothers, which I'm not even sure. I don't think it's still there. But it was really big. I can picture the sign. It was in an industrial park. And a lot of people I know worked at Angelo Brothers. It was a very big company for a very long time in the northeast section of Philadelphia. So she worked there. You know, they said she was a nice woman. But Eric did not like her because, and this was interesting to me, it said he did not like how much time that it took up. She would come in and whine, these are his terms, about the divorce that she was going through. She probably just needed someone to talk to. But Eric did not like her because of that. I believe it was the time taken away. Maybe he wanted attention. You never know. And I'm not saying they didn't give him enough attention, but you don't know. It just seems like, why would he hate her because she's whining about her husband leaving or their separation or whatever? I always think, why? And I believe that perhaps he just wanted attention. Whether he was getting enough or not, I don't know. Now, he really did not like this woman. For whatever reason, April of 1988, Eric was 14. Margaret was 38 years old, And she was discovered, her body was discovered at 8:45, April 15th. So she had laid there, it was April 14th, because she had laid there for a day before she was discovered. And I do believe this is because she lived alone. I guess people didn't see her, you know, and then they called the police. So, because they do have a picture of the police. It says right here, police detectives and officers discuss investigation outside adjoining Morrell Park homes of stabbing victim and suspect in the 3526 address of Churchill Lane. Now, he was young. He was 14 when this happened. The boy's family lived in a semi-detached two-story house next door to Boyle's home on Churchill Lane near Morrell Avenue in the Morrell Park section of Philadelphia. They weren't sure what time the killing occurred. I'll go through the crime first, and then I'll say a little bit of what he said. He entered the house through a skylight in the roof. And he crept down into her house. Now, I cannot imagine you're in a house and you hear this. It's got to be terrifying. All right, he came in, he stabbed her. He repeatedly stabbed her and he tried to cut off her head with a serrated knife. As always in movies, this looks like this easy task. Wasn't an easy task. This is definitely a trigger for any sexual assault victims. So if this is a trigger for you, please be forewarned. But he did start to sexually assault her with a shower rod, like from the curtain. After this, he continued to beat her. He threw her down the steps. And he got a knife and he took it. He proceeded to dig the knife into her chest because he wanted to watch her heart stop. He wanted to make sure she was dead. And there was no question about what had happened or who it was. Now, during the trial, he said when he went in there, his full intent was to kill and rob Mrs. Boyle. Whether the sexual assault, I don't know where that, he did not say he came in to sexually assault her as well, but it did happen. He said that he wanted to kill her. The police came in. Now he ran off with $20 and her 1981 Chevy Camaro. The officer stopped him on Red Lion Road near Bustleton Avenue for a traffic violation. Bloody clothes were found in the car at this time. When the officers stopped the car, they had not known about the murders, but they had suspected that the car might have been stolen and held Van Zandt while they ran to check. Van Zandt tried to run away, but was caught a half mile away near Bustleton and Haldeman, which is very, very close. He was hiding in a dumpster. Another youth who had been a passenger in a car was allowed to leave and go to nearby George Washington High School. It was a normally quiet street. And some describe Van Zandt as a troublemaker. Others say he was an average kid. A Washington High student who would not give his name said that this short, husky boy who looked two or three years older than his 14 years was involved with a rough crowd. At school, he thinks he's Mr. Tough Guy. He goes around hitting kids and punching them in the halls. He was popular. He was cool, said a 12-year-old. I won't mention the kid's name because he was a minor at the time. He played football with us and helped us build a fort. Other children said that Van Zandt scared him by showing them a real gun and pointing it to them. He caused a lot of trouble on this block, said, well, this one was older than 18. Her name was Kathy. He stood in the middle of the street and dared me to run him over recently. I went around him and he cursed me. He did the same thing to my mother. His school record was spotty and he seemed like a normal kid until high school. He liked to have fun, do different things, and then he hit 13 and he just became a different person. Now, he said he was high on LSD when this occurred. They said there was a couple other drugs they had found, cocaine, pot, I think that's about it. Maybe some other pill, Xanax, maybe something. But it was mostly the LSD, and he said it was stronger than he remembered. Now, I have done LSD. I had more than my fair share of experimentation with it. at the time, you didn't have pills that were fake. Like, you could have somebody selling a pill as a Valium when it was a, you know, an allergy pill, but they weren't looking and pressed to say Xanax and filled with fentanyl. People have their own presses now where they put, and that's how Michelle McNamara died. People make their own drugs, and people are always putting fentanyl on things because it is strong, but it's a killer. Most people cannot tolerate fentanyl. I would not do drugs in today's world because I don't know. I feel like when I did them as a kid, I'm not promoting drug use. Please believe that. I'm just trying to get across that when I experimented with acid, I do see how they say there are good aspects to it. Microdosing is this new thing. But if you do it dangerously and take too much, yes, I can see you not only freaking out. LSD is not to be played with. That is such a strong drug, and it's a hallucinogen. So if you take enough of it, you're not going to know what you're doing. I mean, that's why people were jumping out of windows back in the 60s, because it was so new and people were taking it and thought they could fly and everything else. You know, there's certain drugs that I don't think are bad by itself and in a controlled environment. I am terrified for kids because everything has this fentanyl in it. The experimentation phase is not what it once was. One experimentation could become a potential disaster. So for this kid, if he was mentally ill, if he did have problems, and then he used acid on top of it, that just really is the worst. Now, I did read that for a long, long time, they were trying to get him into a program that would help him with what his mother especially said was mental illness. He had a mental illness. He was struggling and he wasn't getting help. You know, 2008, I read a lot of things. And I think because he was a minor at the time, I had a lot of trouble finding out after 2016, because before 2016, I could find out pretty much a lot of documents, and he had many, many appeals for this crime. It's a horrible crime. And he said he's redeemed himself. He said, you know, he got help. He did many good things. This was him speaking. He's a part of this new group that gets out of jail, and they change their world. They become, you know, they're trying to make something better of themselves. So the one thing that I did see he was a part of is this thing called GROWN, Elevate Your Thinking. And he is on there smiling. And I just worry because, I mean, this is the part where it gets sticky because, okay, what happened was in 2018, after 30 years of trying to get help, and then there was another, I guess, 20 years he went through just getting help for his mental illness. But then in 2008, 2014, 2016, he went for an appeal to be released, and it was no, no, no. Now, suddenly in 2018, he was released. Now, he's out of jail. He's out on his own. Now, and he's doing, yes, my dog, it's snowing and we need to get out so badly. That poor dog. Basically, he is a part of this group called Growth Elevate Your Thinking. And I did look at a few videos. They were people who had been incarcerated for some time. The one guy had a playground open for children. And I'm not sure what everyone's crime was. I only know of Eric. But the program itself seems well thought out. You know, I don't know Eric. And I, like I said from the beginning, I really didn't want to, I this is why I was very much on the fence, because how do you put it? Like, I am probably 2 degrees separated from knowing Eric myself. And did he get rehabilitated? I don't know. should he have been let out of jail? I don't know. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, it got me thinking about a lot of things. Now, that was the story. It was relatively short, but I wanted to tell it because it got into a whole other thing that I thought was fascinating and fascinating to think about. There was one thing that jumped right out. Leslie Van Houten from the infamous Charles Manson murder. Leslie Van Houten had stood apart from that group from the beginning. In fact, she was let go in the 70s and she was out of jail for 2 years, and she had and then they chose to retry her and they reconvicted her. Now, all these years, she's done nothing but good, and she's been in there 44 years. They won't let her go. I mean, and am I against that? Am I for it? You know, when I think about what happened to the Tate LaBiancas, I have to be brutally honest. I think let them all rot. Let them rot in there. And then I think, wow, but this person only did one thing in his early teens and he was let out. I mean, was that right? That's why I don't want to answer the question, because I don't have Eric here to talk to. I don't have any members of the Boyle family to talk to. I don't want to poke at old wounds. You can ask people for interviews, but sometimes, you know, in this situation, I don't entirely know if it's appropriate. I really don't, because either one, I'm sure the Boyle family is not happy, and I don't know about the Van Zandt family. I only know about Eric getting out. That's the story, but it did bring up questions for me about my dog. It's okay. So, you know, when I was younger, and I mean younger, the guy's dead now. That's why I can tell this story. And he died a long time ago. I knew I had went out with a guy who was hot. H-O-T. And all the girls fell over him. He knew what he was doing. He just had that way. You would fall in love with him instantly. I mean, he was God, like a Greek god. And I remember when we pulled up to this car washing stand and these guys came out of the woodwork, and you would have thought he was Al Capone the way they were washing his car. And they were like, oh, I don't even know if I should use his real name. I mean, he's dead, but I'll just say his first name. His first name was Ray. They were like, oh, Ray, you know, you are like the man. And I mean, they were just falling all over themselves for him. And I thought, who the hell are you? You know, so we go back to the house one night that I was living at. And I kind of bounced around when I was between 18 and, I mean, I did go to college when I was 23. So 18 and 23, I was at this house, and Ray lived with me. And one night I found him just sobbing. I mean, sobbing. And I said, what is wrong? And he was like, they were all bad people. They were all bad people. And I knew what he was talking about, but I remember I told my dad, and my dad was like, Deb, you know, he's talking through his ass. But no, I was like, Dad, you just don't know him, and you don't know what I'm seeing. I'm seeing literally the collapse of this kid. I mean, he's 21, but at the time, I mean, now it seems like a kid, but at the time I was only 21 as well. I mean, I was seeing a collapse of a man with a very good soul that had been corrupted by the devil. And that's what I'm trying to get to the point. You know, then that point in Goodfellas when he says, your enemies are going to come to you with smiles. And that's how enemies come to you. That's how the devil comes to you. They're not going to come with this, you know, rip-roaring, horrifying look. They're going to try to lure you in by the most sneakiest of ways. He really broke my heart. I mean, I cannot express how devastated I was, because he promised me the world and then took it away but it's only as an adult that I can see how sick he was. And it was due to the fact that everything fell apart in the end. He was doing stuff he shouldn't have been doing, whatever it may be. Say it wasn't even to the point where he was doing the ultimate of crimes. He was doing something, and it was bad enough that one day he climbed on top of a car and by accident fell off of the car and he died. I never thought that was an accident. I thought that was suicide straight up. I know that in those final months, he had a lot of money in his bank. I watched that money being siphoned out. I seen him just so angry at me because, you know, girls would do anything for him. I mean, anything. And when he broke my heart, I was so pissed off. It took all of my power. And I mean, every bit of strength I had to not cave in to him. And thank God I didn't, because I don't know where I would have been today had I done that, caved. And that's why, but it took me a long time to see, okay, he might have been an okay person, but there was something there. And that's what I worry about for Eric. What if there is a really good, I mean, I don't know him again. Maybe he is a good person that encountered, and I hate to say this because it sounds a little ridiculous when you say he encountered the devil, because people think, oh God, that's ridiculous. But the devil in the form of just evil, not the man with tails and a horn, but the devil in the form of evil. What if he just encountered that, got attached to it, and did come out of it? I don't know. You know, I just, something that bothers me is that I don't know how much I can say. I really don't. I just hope that what happened to him in his life journey is bringing him to the best possible person he could be, because he was let out, you know. That's on him now to prove that he is the good person that he says he is, and that what happened was awful and a tragedy. And I am 100% for Margaret Boyle and her family. 100%. You know, I cannot imagine how they feel. I mean, that's all I can really say, you know. And I'm not saying that Eric shouldn't be let out. I am telling you, I am really giving this up to you guys. This is for you to think about, because this is really a tough one for me. And the only reason I did not go against the people that love and care for me and told me to not publish this episode, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And when I can't stop thinking about something, I have to do what I have to do to get rid of it, or else it's going to torment me forever. So let's end it there. And I will be doing the Alaska Massacre, Craig Alaska Massacre next. That tale is, that's a mystery inside a mystery. And I am just beginning to see what a mystery it is. It's going to be a really good one. That'll be next. Thank you for all of those lovely reviews on Apple Podcasts, because it is so hard to get a review on Apple Podcasts. The people that wrote those reviews, I cannot express what that means to me. I mean, I really try hard to, like, not only to get people to think, but to help, perhaps. I mean, like with the last episode, if anything could ever be done to find the killers of those victims, that the mysteries are unsolved. The one was older, the one's new. You know, that would be amazing. If they could ever find out what happened to Ellen Greenberg, that episode haunts me. I think about her a lot. I think about her parents a lot. Just because of the way I worded things on that episode doesn't mean, again, that I'm not 100% for Ellen Greenberg's parents. I just feel a certain way. That's my expressed opinion. But I am always, the victim is always in my mind. And that was a very important one to do because it's ambiguous. It's a tough one. And I don't like to gloss over things that are tough. It would bug me. And it's been weighing very heavy on me. And so now that I can get that out, you can think what you want to think. And then I can move on to the Alaskan Craig mystery. Again, I'm always here. DebbieQ@therightshoepodcast.com. My email is on the first page of my website, therightshoepodcast.com. ShopaholicDeb44 or BookshopWare1 on Twitter. I do check my Twitter. I check everything. It just takes me longer with Twitter. I am much more Instagram. It seems to be more user-friendly, but I love all of the, I totally enjoy all of the apps and the engagement with people. I really do. And anybody that wants a promo, please, I would be more than happy to. At Christmas, I became a bit overwhelmed and I tried to get back to everybody. I hope that I did, but please, I would love to do a promo. For anybody, just come out and ask me. You know where I am, especially my Instagram friends. I'm right there for you. It's Debbie Q, and you're listening to The Right Show.